I'm Dane Young from UGASports.com alongside Jim Donnan. And Coach, we have another one of your friends from your ESPN days. We have, he's known as the Bear on College Game Day and otherwise, Chris Felica joining us.
Yeah, very fortunate to get the Bear on with us, one of the top guys in the country now. I used to know him when he had holes in his shoes up there, but he's the man. And I tell you, when I was working up there, when you needed some help, if he couldn't do it, he'd put somebody else. And every time I went on the air, they made me look good with all these facts that I never would have thought about. But we'll talk a little bit more about how he deals with all this backup stuff for people. But how's it going, Bear? Glad to have you with us, buddy.
I'm happy to finally be on with you. Talk some ball. You've been on with Steve and I a couple of times, so it's good to head on over to your platform. No, we're doing good. We're inside of 100 days, and I think everybody's looking forward to having a quote unquote real football season this year after kind of dealing with what we dealt last year and navigating that. At least we had some type of college football, and it was different all about the country. But I think everybody's really looking forward to getting back to what we're used to this fall.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, at least you got to go out some, you know, yeah, for game day and cover the games. But going into the season now, the first question everybody around here wants to know is, what's the perception that you have, the national perception, your buddy Curb Street, everybody, how do they feel about the Dogs going into this year?
I think I can't speak for Kirk and Chris and Reese and Dez, and well, I'll speak for Paul because he's probably going to have the same opinion that I do. But I think they are clearly the team to beat in the SEC East. I think what happens in the opener is kind of an interesting dynamic. But my biggest concern, obviously, would be how do you replace George Pickens? We saw the rapport that he and JT Daniels had last year once JT got the job and locked it in. I think everybody was expecting to see a really fun, wide open offense and see what he and Pickens could do throughout the year. Obviously, his career is probably over at Georgia, but JT's got some other weapons, and I think I would think that the Dogs are probably going to try and work that transfer portal, see if they can get some help in, maybe at receiver, maybe some help in the secondary. But I think they're the team to beat in the SEC West, and I think the biggest thing for them is that week one game against Clemson, I think, can go so many different ways in terms of not only the SEC East. The national title race, but the Heisman Trophy as well. Because obviously, I think the winner, whether it's JT or if it's DJ Uiagalelei, they vault to kind of the front or really high up on the Heisman race. If Georgia were to beat Clemson, then they kind of have a quality win and maybe can afford a loss in their back pocket. Or maybe if they were to lose in the SEC championship game in a close game, you could still win. But if Clemson were to beat Georgia week one, you're still in a position to get and achieve all the goals that you want. But I think they are the team to beat in the East. And I think it's a big year because I think since they came so close to beating Alabama in the title game a couple of years ago, I think everybody's been expecting them take that next step, get back to the playoff, and ultimately win it. And I think this was kind of the year that everybody was pointing to for Kirby Smart. So we'll see if they can get there. But I probably would have them no lower than number three in the preseason rankings. I think you'd have to go Clemson number one right now, Alabama number two right now, and I'd put Georgia at three.
Yeah, I understand that too. I'd go with it. But you got a really good feel for it because you're there all the time. And by that, I mean you cover – at least two or three games a year for Clemson. What do you think of their personnel? I mean, they lost some really good players for sure. And particularly, you know, with the quarterback and running back, and they got some issues in their secondary. What do you think of this Clemson team coming back? They got destroyed by Ohio State last year.
Yeah, they did it. And that the secondary really hurt them last year. But I wouldn't worry too much about them offensively. I think we saw what Uiagalelei can do in the time that he played against Notre Dame, who was a decent defense last year. I think they're going to be fine at running back. The biggest concern I would have for Clemson is kind of on their offensive side of the ball, but at receiver. It seemed like they really were lacking and missing that slot guy, whether it was a Renfro or someone like that. That's kind of what made their offense going. They recruited as well as anybody in the country, some of these wide receivers, but it seemed like they were missing that interior over the middle kind of guy. And their offense was basically at times the guys running along, throwing up for grabs and let those freaks go up there and get the ball. So that would concern me. They probably have to find someone like that, but on their schedule, who's going to be able to exploit those things until outside of Georgia? No one in the ACC is going to be able on their schedule is going to be able to exploit that during the regular season. It's only going to be Georgia or potentially when they get to the college football playoff again.
Exactly.
Chris, I've got a process question just for you, because on game day, we see it where the host or reporters, sometimes they just kind of drop a question out there to see, can he even figure this out? They test your knowledge almost. And then in talking with Maria Taylor and David Pollock around these parts, when they come around Athens, they say that you're just an encyclopedia. How do you have the time to watch or as much sports as you do, or do the research, I guess, to know as much as you know about each individual team?
I don't treat it really as a job, I guess would be the best answer. It's my life. It's been my life growing up to where I am right now. I was the kid growing up in New York, keeping score in my scorebook for a Yankees game during the summer in 1980. So I've always known I wanted to be involved in sports. I was the one I'd have those big, you wouldn't remember these big green sports encyclopedia books that used to get it at the Woolworth for a couple of bucks. And I used to read those things and just kind of memorize stupid facts and just being around sports growing up. I think it's just watching and learning and absorbing and then just loving what I do. Like I said, I don't treat it as a job. I treat it as kind of like this labor of love. And I genuinely have a passion and inquisitive mind to learn and look at these numbers and absorb as many opinions and whether it's a note or a power rating or a statistic. It's just something that I love doing. And half the battle is you may not necessarily know the answer off the top of your head, but you certainly know where to go to get the answer or the process in order to get the answer. So that's the most important thing. I can't memorize everything, but the most important thing is to be able to know where to go as efficiently as possible to get the answer.
Well, you sure know where to go, that's for sure. And let's talk about the process of getting ready for the big game every week. Take us through what you do, real quickly, point by point. Like, you guys have a meeting early in the week and then you end up getting to the site and then the day of the game. Just give us a quick rundown on how that works.
Yeah, you know, well, the week really starts as soon as it ends, just because of the time constraints that our show was under. Literally on Sunday, I'll get back home and I'll have lunch and spend the afternoon kind of relaxing. And then that night, I wind up putting together a weekly planner, essentially for college game day is what I call it. It's essentially ranked matchups, the biggest games of the week. It's kind of like thumbnails and just a stream of consciousness type stuff, thoughts, numbers I want to look into, story ideas of things that could go into building the show and building elements within the show, whether it's the graphic piece, a feature, a conversation, anything like that. So really the rundown, kind of the order of the show that gets put together is really formed off of that document. And then that you alluded to the meeting that we have early in the week, the conference call between myself, the producer of the show, Reese, Kirk, and whoever else wants to hop on that call. We kind of kick around some ideas as some things that people are passionate about and will probably make the best TV. And so as we do that, Wednesday is kind of the day that I dread, I think, of all the days in the week. Wednesday is kind of the one there where I kind of have like the least amount of time to do the biggest amount of work because I have to travel on Thursday to site. And then once we get to site on Friday, we'll have our Thursday, we'll get together. Typically, well, last year we couldn't, obviously, but during that course of the year, we'll have like a big Thursday meeting kind of to finalize any other like ideas. And then Friday will be a production set day where graphics get built, all of our stuff will get tied together in the truck. And then Saturday we go. It really is. It's no days off throughout the year, but I wouldn't from the end of August through January, but I wouldn't have it any other way. It's a lot of work, but it's fun work. And it's something that I couldn't imagine not being involved in.
Yeah. And, you know, everybody sees you on game day and you're on the set and you're adding your value with the with your picks and also your opinions. But people don't realize during the game itself, you're actually mm-hmm. there providing a lot of info during the game. So how does that work? What do you do exactly? Yeah. You're right there in the press box, right?
Well, actually, I'm in the production truck, which works out great.
Okay.
Because that allows me to have direct conversation into Chris's headset, into Kirk's headset, into the producer's headset, into our graphics producer's headset. Like I can wind up being eyes and ears for Kirk and Chris while other games are going on. Cause we all know the game that Chris are calling is not the only game going on at the same time. So we're calling a game in prime time. Example for last year, we were somewhere and the Notre Dame Clemson game was going on. So I was able to kind of watch that game, keep them up to date what was going on there while our game was going on. So there's a lot of different things that are going on during that telecast. Me keeping my own stats, getting in Kirk's here. Hey, 87 with the block in case he misses something that's going on the field. So statistics, spotting eyes and ears, noticing trends that are going on in the game, watching other games going on. But yeah, that's something that I really miss. Because I used to do in college, I would work as a student assistant in the Miami Sports Information Department. I would work and do live in-game stats for like visiting radio and TV networks that came to Miami to do Heat, Dolphins, Marlins, whomever, Panthers. And I love that rush of live sports and being involved in it at a courtside or in a truck or in a booth and being involved during a game, doing live stats during a live game, the excitement of everything constantly going on. I don't want to come across like I was in a rut or anything, but adding that to my plate as well as the game day stuff kind of energized me a little bit. Like, wow, this is a new spin on what I've been doing, something else more to do, another challenge. And I've really come to really comfort and enjoy that role.
Were you ever nervous when they came to you? And I don't know if it was Kirk or whoever. I know you all are tight, but when they said, "Hey, let's put a camera on you. Let's add you to the on-air product."
No, I never. The only thing I was nervous about initially was coming across as this big idiot from loudmouth from New York who talks fast, and talks loud, and talks waving his hands and gets animated. But that's kind of what they wanted, and that's kind of why I was a little hesitant in doing it, because I was like, I don't want to come across as this fool. And then when the show went to 3 hours, they were finally like, okay, Kirk and Fowler and Lee Fitting, who were really the ones behind, who was the producer at the time, Lee Fitting, were really behind forcing me, but saying, oh, we're going to do it now. And it's worked out great. But I've never been kind of nervous or intimidated on air, because like everyone kind of sees in this like Zoom era now that it's just you don't really even notice you're on. Like I have this little GoPro camera right by my set, and all I do is just act like I'm talking to the guys on the set. So I never really, it's just like a basic conversation like I would have every day with everyone. So I just view it as me having a conversation like I would in a meeting room or on the phone or on a Zoom or in person with the guys. And I don't even pay attention to the little light that says that I'm on TV. And I think that's what kind of makes me feel comfortable and makes it work so well.
Hey, that's for sure. And you do a tremendous job with it, and you got your own little niche. You know, we're going to kind of go around the country here and just, you know, real quick little bites here, because from the standpoint of who do you think is going to challenge Oklahoma in the, you know, the Big 12? You know, everybody knows about Iowa State, but do you think Texas is for real? Do you think Oklahoma State's coming back? What do you think of Big 12? We'll just go down right down through every conference real quick.
Yeah, I'm a little unsure about Oklahoma State this year. They have so much to replace, and they always seem like the team that finds a couple of losses along the way that they really shouldn't have, and then they find a way to pull a win off that they don't shouldn't normally have. But I worry a little bit about Oklahoma State this year. Texas, who knows? I think Sark going in there with the staff that he has now, I don't expect them to challenge Oklahoma for the Big 12 title. But at the same time, the last few years, in the Red River game, they've been right there with them. So it shows that the gap really isn't that big. But I think over the course of the year, I think year one for Sark, it might be too much to ask. But I think Iowa State is the obvious answer. I worry because everyone's kind of a year late on Iowa State. I was there last year when they came close to winning the Big 12. You got everybody back. The problem is now you're dealing with expectations after never having any expectations in the history of your program. And you know that as a coach, your mentality going into the year or a game as an underdog is so much different than kind of now you're the hunted and you got a game against Iowa early in the year and you haven't beaten the Hawkeyes in forever. You lose that game. What does that do to your season? What happens if you drop a game along the way? Maybe you're not supposed to, or you go to Oklahoma and you lose and you don't wind up back in the Big 12 championship game like most people think. Now, I think the leadership on the team that they have with Purdy and Hall and some of the guys on defense, I think they're good enough to overcome some of that. But you know, I think probably better than anyone, now that you're actually going into a year with people noticing and expectations, that's going to be a lot, I think, to handle for Iowa State.
How about the SEC West now? Everybody talks about Bama. What do you think? Is A&M ready to make a move? LSU going backward? Auburn new coach? What do you think? Is this going to be all Bama, or what's the deal?
I think it is. You summed it up with how you said LSU going backwards, is A&M ready to make a move. Like, I have concerns about LSU this year. I know they had the turnover on the coaching staff again, but I can't get last year out of my head, even though it was a weird year. And that's one of the things I'm kind of struggling with this year. And I'm sure this is something we're going to talk about, whether it's you and I and Steve are on the show. Like, how much credence, how much stock do you buy into what happened last year in situations where teams either A, had overachieved and had a really magical special season, or B, went the other way and had the bottom fall out and had an unusually bad year? But I'm there's something about LSU that worries me this year. I don't think they're on Bama's level. I think the early look ahead line and that spread was like Alabama minus 19 or so, which is crazy. Yeah. And A&M fans hate me because I picked North Carolina to cover against him in the Orange Bowl, and I picked Auburn to beat him, and Auburn had that, just basically gave the game away. And I think I picked someone else to cover against A&M, and maybe they, it was a bad, I don't know, but I did pick A&M to Florida last year. They seem to forget that. But Jimbo has to replace his quarterback. He's got to replace a good part of the offensive line. The defense should be really good, but when was the last time A&M went into one of these big, like, hyped top 10 matchups at Kyle Field and they rose up, pull the upset? Like, when they win these games, it's because either they're unranked or they're ranked outside the top 10, or maybe they're on the road and the team's sleeping. I mean, when Johnny Football won that game down in Tuscaloosa, it was a big upset, and they weren't a top 10 type team. But now you're on your home field, you're 10.5, 11-point underdog against Alabama in the middle of the year. It's going to be one of the hype games of the year. A lot of pressure on them to win that game. It's almost like until they win one of them, I just have a hard time buying in and believing that they're ready to do that. Auburn, you hit on it with Harsin. New system, new coaching. I think it's kind of a year zero, year one. I don't think you can expect Auburn to contend with Alabama this year. So I actually made the suggestion the other day on Daily Wager. We were talking about the SEC, and I said, why not lay the 125 or 140, whatever it was, on Alabama to win the SEC, because this is probably the lowest point of the year that they're going to be power rated. And if they do wind up making the SEC championship game, you're going to have to lay a heck of a lot more than 140, I think, on the money line for them to win. If they play Georgia in the SEC championship game, they're probably a 6.5-point favorite, and it offers you an opportunity to kind of maybe buy back on a little if you want to try and guarantee yourself profit by taking the underdog on the money line. So I think Alabama is still clearly the team to beat in the SEC West.
Hey, that's for sure. How about one other thing, and we'll let Dane come in here. Anybody in the country – we know about the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and everything. Anybody in the country that you think could maybe make a dent this year outside those top four or five teams?
I think Oregon is a team to still look at. I think if you look at Oregon, I don't think anybody expects them to go to Ohio State and win early in the year with a new quarterback, but their defense is really, really good. And I think what happens after that Ohio State game is going to be key for the Ducks. Like, their season win total was 9. And I think they're simply better than everybody else in the Pac-12. Maybe they go to Washington and get caught up in a rivalry game and lose. But I think with Thibodeau and some of those guys on defense, the Ducks are going to be a team that you're going to watch. I think Joe Moorhead with that offense with the new quarterback, I think they're going to be pretty dynamic there. So I'm really looking forward to see how Oregon does after the Ohio State game, win or lose.
Chris, one thing I wanted to ask you about, because I love asking our guests this, just about your friendship with Coach Don and how you got to know him, how you got to be friendly. Obviously, you were, you know, together in the halls of ESPN, but if you got any good stories about him, or just kind of tell me where that connection generated from.
I think it came from just working with him when I was fortunate enough to do that when he came back up to Bristol. It was weird because he would come up and then I would kind of have to leave most of the time for game day. So I didn't get to spend a ton of time with Coach on College Football Saturdays, but in person, but just getting to interact with him throughout the week. And then even since he's been gone, he's just someone's opinion who I value, respect, and trust. And he makes it fun. He's got so many great stories about his experiences in the game, maybe a point of view on a game or something that I might be missing or Steve might be missing. And he's someone who has really educated me on a lot of things about the game before. Now, look, I can look at stats. I can look at numbers. I can have an opinion on what I'm seeing happening on the field, but he can tell you why. And I think that's made me more successful in my job, being able to marry my knowledge of numbers with his knowledge of the game to kind of explain why what I'm seeing on the numbers and what he's seeing on the field, why they all kind of mesh. But I think I got to keep him around, if nothing else, for his stories from NC State and from Georgia and from Marshall and Oklahoma. Because you talk about a guy who should write a book. This guy right here should write a book. Yeah, be a bestseller.
Hey, well, one thing for sure that we do have this kind of rapport, Dane, during the games or on Saturday, I don't try to hit him up much, but when I do, I got an idea, I'll tell him about it and he'll hit me right back. And it's not trying to do anything but help the show. And that's what I try to do. And because I think so much of Kirk and Reese and Chris, and of course my man Bear, number one, but occasionally I'll have something to maybe help you a little bit.
What you'll do, and it's important, and I'm glad you brought up earlier in the show about the ABC primetime game. Like, that is a time of the day where you kind of only have that one game going on, and my day is not as crazy because I'm not traveling from site to game. But like during the game, when we're all watching the same thing, you're former coach sitting there watching, seeing what's going on, and that's those observations that you have throughout the game are things that I can certainly pass along to Kirk and Chris and whomever else that it's certainly still adding to the telecast. So I certainly appreciate anytime you chime in. I need to have like the special messaging for you and Steve. That's like the next step for this year. Whenever Coach and Steve, that text chain chimes in, I have to figure out a good ringtone for that.
You're always ready for it. And just like today, you know, our fans, I know the last time we actually had game day down here when it was really a situation, I took you out to eat. And, people usually come up and ask me for autographs, but they were all over you. I felt like a redheaded stepchild out there with the bear. But it was kind of fun being out together like that. And seeing everybody around here, how they reacted about you, Bear. There's a lot of love and a lot of respect there. I thought that was kind of cool seeing you out there in the men's grill and everybody coming up to you and making you feel at home, didn't you?
No, that was a nice little lunch we had over at the club there, and still got that shirt and wear it with pride, and then having being out later that Friday night at dinner was great. Getting the slip notes during dinner. Who do you, just between us, who do you like? That was kind of fun. And your dinner recommendations, your lunch, you are like the food connoisseur. My man right here, I'm sitting last year in Winston-Salem week one in a hotel room. And he's like, where are y'all staying? He's like, if you got some time, you want to head about 25 miles southeast in little Lexington barbecue. And my man just will never steer you wrong when it comes to the food suggestions. That place was a gold mine. That was so good. Make sure you put me on the right path again this year too.
Yeah, I hated you got sick out in Oklahoma because you had some. Yeah. You got sick when you're doing the OU game. We had some good places for you, but hey, this is a great thrill for us to have you on. You know, I'm always on with you a couple times a year on your show, but to be on ours is big for our fans, and they love what you do. And I'm looking, it's good to see you in person instead of just talking to you. So keep up the good work, and I hope you make a lot of money in the French Open, Bear.
Well, we're recording this, a couple of big upsets today, but none of them bit me. And Djokovic is having his way with Tennis Sandgren. And I'm hoping that the game day will be at that Clemson Georgia game in Charlotte week one. I know Kirk and Chris and myself will be there and Maria to call that game. But maybe we'll get a chance to see in Charlotte there week one. If not, I don't even know off the top of my head what are the home games for the Dogs this year. I don't know if we have another chance to get down to Athens this year or not.
Yeah, our home schedule is okay, but I don't know if we'll have a game day. But we'll have to see about that. But, hey, it's always good to talk with you, Bear. Thanks for having the time for us.
Absolutely. Anytime, Coach. Great talking to you.